With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, good morning to you. Grant and Danny on the air on this Tuesday. Live on 106.7 The Fan. Always enjoy listening to the Junkies on my way into the studio. Thanks to Pete for the update as well. Jeff Zilgit was one of the writers at USA Today who broke the big Blake Griffin trade news yesterday. He will be on our show to discuss the swap in 58 minutes at 11. Also today, we'll be talking about Roger Goodell and his attempt to change the catch rule in the NFL. He has decided something has got to give.
Go get him, Raj.
Kudos to him. We'll do that at 10:30. Next hour, another of Mike Shanahan's former young assistants has gotten a promotion and is on the brink of becoming a head coach in the NFL. So you've got Kyle Shanahan looking like he's breaking out in San Francisco, finishing the year with 5 wins. Sean McVay, the coach of the year, very likely in the NFL. Matt LaFleur, now a play caller with the Titans. He's a couple years probably away from being a head coach. That staff, which was largely blown out when the Robert Griffin debacle unfolded, looking better and better as time goes by. Lot to get to on the show. How was your night last evening?
Dominated by reading about the Blake Griffin trade. This is a big one, and people don't think of Blake the way that they have in years past. Obviously, he's been so oft injured. Big gamble for Detroit. But long and short of it is, just I like to think of it this way. We were looking at the pieces and Avery Bradley moving and, you know, Tobias Harris moving and what it means for the two teams sports-wise. That's all well and good. Think about this. This past summer, the Clippers were able to offer Blake Griffin more than any other team. He canceled his other free agent meetings after they did this big recruiting ceremony where they announced him as Clipper for life in the arena and raised his journey to the rafters as a choir sang. And they did this entire big old production. 5 months later, traded to Detroit. Lifetime L.A. Clipper had 6 straight playoff seasons, never gotten over the hump. But this was we're building around you. 5 months later, your butt's out the door.
This, to me, is a great example, and there are dozens of them in every sport, even just in the last couple of years. But when people get upset when players do not show teams loyalty, they are wrong. And when people get bothered by players not putting a team first or staying with a club when they hit free agency or wanting to become a free agent, and they say that they're not loyal to the fan base or loyal to the executives that gave them their chance or the coaches that rolled the dice on them. That's not the right tack. That's not the right way to view this, because you have a million examples like this where the team, as long as it's convenient for them and their plan is to win at this moment and they think that they can, they'll want you, they'll need you, they'll pay you, they'll do what they have to do. But the second, the instant that it makes more sense business-wise for them to either blow it up or to go in a different direction, it doesn't matter what they've promised you. It doesn't matter how long they've committed to you. It doesn't matter that you have a home and your kids go to school there and that you've now made the choice to be a Clipper for the rest of your life. You're gone, dude. You're out. So this is why, as I've gotten older, the whole loyalty to the fan base, as much as it stinks, as a guy who's got jerseys hanging in his closet, just like you guys do, I view this differently. These players, they only get a couple chances to make their own decisions, and teams are not going to just stand by them when they don't have to. They will stand by them when there is something in it for them. But when they don't have to, they're not going to do it just to be good soldiers.
While you were talking, just made a quick note off the top of my head, and I'm sure I'm forgetting some guys. But how about the all-change teams in the last 6 months team I just came up with? Top of my head.
Wait, the what?
This is the all-change teams in the last 6 months team.
Okay.
Meaning they were one place and now they're elsewhere.
Yeah.
Just look at this list of players that they're no longer on the team that they played for forever. Chris Paul, Paul George, Kyrie Irving, Carmelo Anthony, Blake Griffin, Jimmy Butler, Isaiah Thomas. That's the NBA.
It's crazy.
That it moves that quickly.
The NBA, for the reason that you just described with your all-change team, does drama better than anybody.
They got it good.
Now, the Blake Griffin thing was a little bit of a wasted mega move because there was no buildup. There was no hoopla.
No one knew it was coming.
Just was a shocking development. That was my other big takeaway. I don't know if you thought the same thing in any capacity, but how often in sports does a deal of that magnitude come from obscurity? There was, to my knowledge, and you follow it a little closer than I do,
mm-hmm.
I had heard not a single word in the last couple days that Blake Griffin was about to be traded.
Here's what I saw, okay? And I'm like Darn, I'm like a bunch of our listeners, I'm sure. I'm looking at Hoops Hype. I'm looking at, I don't know, Basketball Insiders, Harvard Proxism, all the different sites, because I'm always fascinated with this stuff, especially as you get close to trade time. The first whisper that Detroit wanted out of the Avery Bradley business, a guy that they had acquired, they thought that would really help them. He's actually been a disaster this year, playing tough against the Wizards notwithstanding. He has been awful. They decided they want to get out of the Avery Bradley business. 2 hours later, this trade is consummated. That's how quickly it moved. So who knows how long they've been doing it behind the scenes, but from the first time it gets leaked out there, in a, you know, whether it was a Zach Lowe piece or Alex Kennedy or somebody else, basically said, hey, Detroit, they're a little frustrated that they've lost so many games in a row. They're kind of stuck and stagnated. Their guard play has been either off-injured in Reggie Jackson's case or inept in other cases. They can't really figure out who they want to be or what they are, and Avery Bradley's really killing them. Maybe they want to move him. Boom. 2 hours later, trade consummated. League office approves. Check mark. Book your plane tickets. It's amazing. Crazy. Amazing.
Deal's done. We'll ask Jeff Zilgut about it at 11 o'clock when he joins the show. He did some of the heavy lifting on the reporting last night. But as we welcome you in and get started here on Grant and Danny here on The Fan, NFL Media Day was last night. They have renamed this to be opening night.
Rebranding, yeah.
I'm not going to use that phrase. Okay. I'm going to call it NFL Media Day, which is what it is. It has always been bad. I was lucky enough years and years ago to benefit somewhat from it. I was one of the little kids walking around asking questions, and so I don't take that for granted. But I will say, if I was a player, I would hate everything about this.
Mm-hmm.
I have to sit there and play nice while people ask me, at best, probably ridiculous questions. At worst, inappropriate and or disrespectful questions
right.
at times. I mean, how much of an idiot can you be? If you're a moron, maybe, just maybe, someone will write a story about you while you're there. Because that's what's happening, is people are walking around in capes and outfits, and they're trying to get recorded and become the story. Or they're trying to get interviewed by one of the reporters who, instead of now interviewing the Patriots, is interviewing the crazy guy asking the crazy question. This is one of the things in sports that I would love to do away with tomorrow. And if I just became the person
czar.
Who ran all of sports.
The sports czar.
The sports czar. I was going to use a different phrase because that's Bill Simmons' thing.
Oh, yeah.
Where he does sports czar. But yes, if I was going to be Bill Simmons' sports czar, or if I was going to be the guy who runs all of sports for a day, president of all things sports, one of my first moves would be, especially this time of year, get rid of NFL Media Day at the Super Bowl. I think it is bad for the players. I think it is annoying for the two teams participating. I don't really see how the league benefits in any capacity. I get that you've got people from all over the world and hundreds of people with credentials. I want this to be a professional event. I don't need more hoopla being built and more momentum being frenzied, expectations being amassed in these other countries. I don't care about any of that. People are going to watch the Super Bowl or they're not. They don't need someone walking around barking like a dog to watch the game. I would get rid of this in a second. I hate everything about it. And I know this is a no-fun Rouye take. Maybe there are people out there who enjoy it. I find it to be a complete turnoff. Like last night, I couldn't watch any of it. And there's some good. If you watch NFL Network or ESPN or one of these
right.
channels that has coverage, you're getting interviews with NFL players about the Super Bowl and great access, and dozens of guys who are going to play in the game are being interviewed. I can't sift through all of the tomfoolery to even get to the stuff that I would like, so I don't watch a minute of it.
Here's my analogy, and I think it's well said by you. I live and work inside Washington, D.C. This is my home, okay? I love D.C. I always have. I've lived other places, but D.C. is my home. There are certain times of year where it is tourist season in D.C. I understand it's the lifeblood. I understand it gets eyeballs on my city. I understand ultimately it's to the benefit of Washington, D.C. to have foreign or folks from outside of D.C., from other parts of this country, and North America and beyond, to come to D.C. and spend their hard-earned money looking around my city. When the cherry blossoms happen, it's beautiful. It's awesome. That invites the tourists. It makes it more difficult for those of us that are here every day. You understand the price of admission. You understand what you're dealing with. But the looky-loos and the rubes and the people that don't know how the roads work and the guys that are putting their emergency blinkers on as they get around the tidal basin to look at the Washington Monument because they're ruining morning traffic flow, those guys make it so miserable. That, to me, is what happens when the NFL gets to its highest moment. That is the Super Bowl week. It invites the tourists. It invites the rubes. It invites the guys that aren't there grinding, watching their NFL team in July, figuring out who's going to be the second right guard on their roster. This is not the guy that's doing fantasy prep work that spends $60 for a draft kit. This is not the guy that's reading every article on every website about their team or other teams, teams in the division, listening to opponent radio, listening to us, etc. This invites the tourists and invites the once-a-year looky-loos, and it's in the way. I don't like it because I don't like not rewarding the real fans. I don't like the fact that the door is open and the access is the same for name some television station that's never been there once as it is for the beat reporter that's just trying to get a game story.
I don't even mind the television station that hasn't been there. I mind the goofball who's not in the media. You know, someone who, by way of some weird credential request, either in this country or elsewhere,
right,
is not a media member per se. Maybe they write an entertainment blog or they write some type of piece on a website regularly, but they dress up in full costume and go there. Whoever the guy was who said, "You want me to tell you a joke?" to Bill Belichick, and then said, "What did the coach say to the payphone? Can I get my quarterback?" And Bill Belichick had to feign laugh. Like, that needs to end forever. Until the end of time, that should never happen again. Let's open up the Hadid carpet cleaning listener lines. Is this no fun Ruye and no fun Paulson? Or are we correct on the Super Bowl media day? 800-636-1067. Also, Danny, you do this, I'll do this, and maybe we can get some on the phones. Put together a quick list during the break of some of the more futile exercises, non-game, out of game in sports that you would ban until the end of time, like Super Bowl Media Day, which would be first on my list. And if you guys have one of these futile sports exercises not in-game that you would get rid of, would love to hear from you. 800-636-1067. Grant and Danny is underway. Thing I think is that if you're a real media member who covers one of those teams, to your point about the beat guys, that's your access for the day, to my knowledge.
That's what bothers me about it more than, I mean, because I don't really like that stuff anyway. You know, and some people think it's funny, it's bad shtick. It's, again, it's amateur hour. That's really what it is. It's the everybody gets to descend, everyone gets 2 minutes on the karaoke machine, let's go. The thing that I care about, though, is, as I said, it's tourist season. It's the looky-loos. It's the one time a year you care about football, or at least you pretend to, and you go and make it about yourself. Whereas there's a guy who's been with the Eagles all season long. Now, I of course, hate the Eagles. But there's a reporter that wants to figure out, hey, how are you going to deal with the Patriots if Gronk isn't healthy, or if he is? Like a legitimate story where he's going to pass information on to the fans who this is their biggest moment. All those other people are in the way.
I'm being told by people on Twitter, including this guy Gabe, that the person who asked Bill Belichick about his quarterback from the payphone was Guillermo from Jimmy Kimmel, which makes it the funniest bit ever. No, it doesn't. It's still not funny. I like Jimmy Kimmel, and I like Jimmy Kimmel's show. I don't love Guillermo as a sidekick, personally. I also didn't like the robot that sat next to, what was his name, Jeff?
Jeff was on Craig Ferguson.
Craig Ferguson. I don't like that bit. I think what happens is guys get lazy and they just rely on their sidekick. And for a long time, and I think still, I don't watch the show anymore, Conan O'Brien had
Andy Richter.
Andy Richter. Whatever that is, I don't need that. I don't want a second person or robot or character that you just lean on the whole time. I don't care about that, though. The point is, it was an unfunny joke. And Media Day stinks. But we're asking you, first of all, what's your thoughts on Media Day? 800-636-1067. Is it time to just get rid of it completely? And then second, what other sports futile exercises are there that you would get rid of? I've got two of them here that I jotted down. I want to see what you've got as well. Brock Duck Cookie, our boy from Chadwick
versus
the World.
Oh, yes, of course.
Says, get rid of the medal ceremonies at the Olympics. Act like you've been there before. Stop gloating. So he wants... Is this no, like, silver, gold, and bronze platforms with the national anthem playing? Interesting. I actually enjoy those, Brock Duck Cookie.
Because think about this. You're the second best in the world at something. That's pretty neat. That you deserve a moment.
Probably. I will say this. I don't think we need to televise as many of them as we do. I don't think they need to go on as long as they do. I could use, like, maybe 10 to 12 seconds of seeing that. not 2 minutes of hearing the entire anthem. I think it's kind of cool, though, that you hear your country's anthem, you see the flag being raised. That's got to be a powerful moment. Here are the two that I jotted down.
Go ahead.
The first one is something I'd get rid of right away. We talk about it on the show all the time, and that is the fourth preseason game.
Get I just wrote that down. I just thought of it.
The final preseason game of the NFL's August slate. It's unnecessary. Nobody really uses it anymore as an opportunity to play guys that are going to be on their team. Some teams use it when they're evaluating the final two or three spots on the roster. They could make the decision with slightly less information after three preseason games. And they could even retool those three preseason games, employ their players a little bit differently, and have the same amount of information and intel and not have to really miss out on anything. So I would get rid of the last preseason game. The other thing I would do away with as a futile exercise in sports right away, which is the question at 800-636-1067, the song before NFL games. And I don't care who sings it. I don't care if it's Carrie Underwood, who's gorgeous and talented. I don't care if it's Kelly Clarkson, who does a good job. I don't care if it's... You name the lady, Faith... Is it Faith Hill?
Faith Evans? Faith Hill,
which
yeah.
one was it?
Yeah.
Whoever sings those stupid songs, I never need to see another one of them again. I just don't. They don't interest me.
Hey, guys, football's here. It's going to be played. Sit down on your couch and watch this game. Stop doing that forever. It's dumb with the montage of, like, Jason Pierre-Paul, like, nodding his head real slow, or, like, Eli Manning throwing a pass to, like, a speeding car, which turns into a falcon. Shoot those into the sun. That's a great one. I hate the songs.
What do you got?
Absolute hatred. Number one is making the NBA draft lottery an hour-long show. That's an insult. Roll the numbers. Pick them. Let's go. Stop interviewing reps from teams that don't really want to be there because it means they're the 13 worst teams in the NBA. Stop doing that. Stop doing that. Stop doing that. The fourth preseason game you covered. That was my other answer. And then, of course, golf. That's the last thing I would get rid of.
Just golf all the way in general?
Yeah. Just make it. Just make sure everyone understands what it is. It's a recreational activity.
But you would... You just threw golf on there casually.
Yeah, I was doing a bit of shtick because I couldn't think of good ones. So just no one's allowed to talk about golf. No one's allowed to talk about what you did in a golf round. No one's allowed to talk about a golf tournament. No one's allowed to talk about golf on television. It just goes away, and it becomes what it is, which is something you do when you retire. You pick up a recreational activity.
You're naming it a futile exercise that shouldn't happen.
Precise.
Golf.
There you go.
I like that. It's a little excessive, but I think it's fun.
It's 100% excessive.
Chips and Burke. Chip, what do you think of NFL Media Day?
Well, look, I want to pick up on your very powerful platform about what would I change in sport. And here are two things that gnaw at me, and I offer them up. One of them's kind of universal. The other's more local and close to home. The one thing that I would change first is I would move the scoreboard, the antiquated scoreboard at Notre Dame's football stadium, that obscures part of the view of Touchdown Jesus. Every time they show Touchdown Jesus, you have to look at about one half to a quarter of this 19th century scoreboard. I'd move it. And the thing close to home, I would get the multicolored W off of the hats of the Nationals and go back to the traditional white and put the multicolored W on the red jersey. And boom, you'd have the best-looking jersey in all of baseball. Over to you guys. Thanks.
Thank you, buddy. Very much. Couple of things. Very specific.
Very specific things.
What is he talking about, the multicolored W? Aren't the W's white?
Yeah, there's like that red, white, and blue alternate W on their blue uniforms, I believe.
Is that what he's talking about?
I believe that's what it is.
They don't wear that very often, though.
Right. That's like a special occasion W.
Navy blue on like Friday or Saturday night home games, maybe?
Yeah, it's like the day game on a special occasion die.
Here's some that came in on Twitter really quickly. And by the way, we got breaking John Wall news in 2 minutes right here on The Fan that you will want to hear. That is 120 seconds away. Ben in Fairfax says, get rid of the trade deadline, all of them. I like the trade deadline. It creates tension. It creates drama. It's must-see television, must-hear radio. 4 p.m., my team, last chance to improve. Better find out if they're going to get their reliever or not. Better find out if they're going to go get a big man or not.
What's your argument against the trade deadline? Meaning you could do it at any time?
I guess,
as the playoffs start or something?
I think you would just make a trade anytime you wanted to. I think it creates for actual suspense that it wouldn't be there in the season otherwise.
I'm pro-trade deadline.
Me too. Every trade would be like last night where the Griffin thing just kind of catches you by surprise rather than a day where you get a lot of news and buildup. Scott says the All-Star Home Run Derby. I wouldn't hate if the Home Run Derby went away. I'd rather tweak it because I think it is cool to watch. I think it's been good and entertaining the last couple of years, but I understand people who don't like it. And it's certainly worth bringing up when you're talking about futile non-game exercises. You can tweet us at Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny, if you've got any thoughts. Right now, though, we've got to get to breaking news on John Wall, which we will react to next on The Fan.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We've been on the air for a half hour, and we've already got a major development and a huge story in D.C. sports. Welcome in, Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan, and we will cover this for you better today than anybody, live on the radio and reacting to everything that we hear. But Candace Buckner of The Washington Post is reporting that John Wall will undergo a knee procedure. He is expected to miss 6 weeks. He will not, obviously, participate in the All-Star weekend coming up in the NBA. A full story was just posted by Buckner, who's got the details for the Washington Post. But the specifics here that you need to know is that John Wall is going to undergo a knee procedure tomorrow. It is being described as a cleanup. Now, a cleanup is nothing substantial, but whether that's arthroscopic or any kind of cleanup that needs to be done leads to a several-week recovery. They're saying he's not going to be back for 6 weeks. That would put him back in the middle of March for what would be then the stretch run for the Wizards. You start to look at the Eastern Conference standings. They were knocking on the door of potentially getting back into the mix for the third seed. But there's also a couple teams breathing down their neck to the point where you can't, I don't think with any confidence and for sure, feel like they can, without John Wall, absolutely avoid that 7-8 conversation.
They're
either
percentage points ahead of Indiana, who's got a couple more games than they do. Indiana has one more loss and one more win. Philadelphia is right there in the 8th spot. Detroit just traded for Blake Griffin, so we'll see how that fits. Rubber meets the road. They may be better. How much better remains to be seen. Washington.
Let me say this differently real quick.
Please.
Because I think there are people probably listening. The most important question from a playoff standpoint is, where is the line of demarcation right now? The Sixers at 24-23 are the 8th seed.
Yes.
Okay. The Pistons, who just traded for Blake Griffin, and we're going to talk to Jeff Zogut of USA Today about that and about Wall coming up at 11 in 25 minutes. The Pistons are 4 games under .500. They are, just so we're all on the same page, 4.5 games back of the Wizards.
Right.
That's the 9th seed. That means you're not in the playoffs anymore. Then you've got the Knicks, who are 5.5 games back. The Hornets, who always play the Wizards well for whatever reason, who are 7 games back. So if you're about to go play 6 weeks of basketball with John Wall, best case scenario is when he comes back, you're still probably in the 6-7 range with the Pacers. But Danny, it is not out of the realm of possibility. I know this is negative, but I think that it's also plausible.
Yeah, it's also
that they could be the 9th seed or the 10th seed when he gets back.
Or they could be the 8th seed and be cannon fodder for somebody. You're assuming that the instant John Wall comes back, he's John Wall. That's a tough ask, by the way, for someone coming back from knee surgery in the middle of the season. This is bad, and those of us that watch the Wizards every night knew something was off. I wish this had happened a couple months ago. I wish this was something that they'd gotten out of the way. Who knows if it was aggravated along the way or whatever, but you would watch him, and you would know this is not the same player. Some nights it was fine. It was, if the temperature was right, the moisture in the building was the exact right way, you got a humidifier, in a certain, whatever it was, he would look good. Then you would see nights where it just wasn't correct. It wasn't right. He didn't have the lift, the explosion, the change of direction, the stop, the start. He wasn't John Wall. He was able to get by with smarts and guts and guile, etc. This needed to happen. I called that it was going to happen. I'm pissed off about it. This, to me, is, well, that went this, there went the season. There went this particular year.
Let me get back to that in a second, but I do want to update one thing. Because Candace Buckner, while we were talking 1 minute ago, just tweeted this out. She's updated the timeline for his recovery. I guess she got some more information. Initially, she said 6 weeks. Now she's saying 6 to 8 weeks is the expectation.
Matters a lot.
For John Wall. Knee scope is tomorrow. It's going to be performed in Cleveland by the exact same surgeon who did his knee surgery in May of 2016. Now, that knee surgery went well, and until now, his knee, it wasn't really a question the last couple seasons. I mean, it helped him
right
last year to take flight and become an MVP candidate at one point in time. Yes, he did. And now we're back to talking about his knee. But that's a big difference, 6 to 8 weeks. So go back. You're basically now saying this season is lost. I think that that is reactionary and a little bit overstated, Danny, for this reason. Bradley Beal and Kelly Oubre are both way better than they were at any point earlier in their career and last year. They've played one game since John Wall's injury, albeit against a terrible Hawks team on the road. And they beat them by over 20 points. They had 40 assists as a team, a season high. I heard Scott Brooks on with the Junkies today saying it was the best ball movement, maybe the best performance of any team he's coached in the last several years dating back to his last stop. Maybe, just maybe, Beal uses this as an opportunity now as a guy who ruffles, you know, Wall's feathers from time to time, and they go back and forth debating who the alpha dog is. And this is his chance to become a superstar. And he puts the team on his back. And let's say Wall misses, what would you say, 2 months of basketball?
2 months,
What, 25 games? Is that fair?
Yeah.
Something like that?
You're basically looking at about 22, 23, up to 28 games.
Okay. So let's say two dozen games. Let's say they go 13 and 11 in those games, something like that. That would keep them afloat and in the playoffs.
Yeah, put him in the 7 or 8 seed.
That's not a lost season at that point if he comes back. And let's say he's not John Wall of last year, but he's John Wall of this year. They still have a chance to get to the second round of the playoffs, which is all most people would have expected anyway.
Here's why it's a lost season. It's, again, you're anticipating Wall coming back and being Wall. That's the rosy side. I don't play that game where someone's getting surgery in the middle of a season. You've got, hey, 5 days, go figure out how to be yourself. The expectations are unreasonable. Second, the ceiling for this team just lowered. And the ceiling is, as you talked about, if things broke the right way and everybody was healthy and Porter was playing well and Markieff Morris was engaged and whatever else, this could be a conference finals team. That's where the window was open to at this point. I think that's now closed. What I'm terrified that they're going to do to stay afloat and try to maintain interest is to do a yet another Ernie Grunfeld mortgage the future, trade away a draft pick, try to move a bad contract to go get a Lou Williams or a Kemba Walker or win that kind of bidding war and see if you can stay afloat. I'm terrified of that. I don't want to do it. They'd be best served being judicious and letting Bradley Beal do what you're talking about. If he's making that kind of a leap and is able to carry this squad, maybe you start Oubre and run Markieff Morris at the five and just play a permanent small ball without a true point guard in the lineup. I don't know what you want to do. But let's say that all happens. Then you can be in the playoffs and have a nice dance, and that's that, but you feel good going into the next season. To me, I would much rather get myself a lottery pick and finally have another young asset to go with this group that's going to be coming back healthy next year. They never think that way, and I wish they would. I think that's the smartest path here, is to be judicious finally with John Wall's knee, stop trying to, you know, go out there on a leg and a half on certain nights and prolonging this thing. I'm glad they're getting it done at this point, but to me, I think you've just capped where your season can end up.
The other side of this, though, is you look at the Eastern Conference, and this has kind of been my opinion for a long time. You still have the Celtics and the Cavs and not much else in terms of teams that are actually going to be a threat to make the finals. I know a lot of people, and you've been big on the Raptors for a few years. Toronto's, in my opinion, they're not doing anything in the playoffs. And if they do, that's fine.
What do you mean by that? Like, they'll win a series and then go home?
Exactly. Kind of like, yeah, okay. They're not getting to the NBA Finals. They don't worry me if I'm Boston or even if I'm Cleveland. Mm-hmm. By the way, the Cavs have been a shell of themselves.
Yeah, they're reeling
6 of 10. They're now third in the conference, and Miami's creeping up on them. I think a game off the pace.
That's the team I like.
Cleveland. But if I'm the Wizards, the other side of this to what you're saying is, all I got to do is get John Wall right and be in that 6 range. And then I'm taking on Toronto, who I've swept out of the playoffs over the last couple of years. Or I'm taking on maybe a 5-4 with a Milwaukee or a Miami. There's no reason, if John Wall comes back and is healthy, that they can't have a productive postseason and still rattle some cages where you get to the game 7 and knock it on the door of a conference final. I don't think anything really changes if John Wall can come back healthy. I just think that's a huge if. I'm not expecting that. What I think is going to happen is Wall has this surgery, comes back, is basically what he was. They get to the playoffs and probably get bounced in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my guess. But I'm saying there's just as good a chance that they do exactly what they did last year as that, assuming the timeline's right and 6 to 8 weeks plays out and he gets back on the floor. But let's get some reactions to the breaking news on Grant and Danny that John Wall's going to miss upwards of 2 months for the Wizards. This is massive. This has been a disastrous season for them to this point, considering the expectations coming in. Hadid Carpet Cleaning listener lines are open. How devastating a blow is this? Do you think this could help the Wizards in some way in getting guys like Otto Porter or Marcin Gortat or Markieff Morris, who've had disappointing seasons, to step up? And to the point where when Wall comes back, maybe they're a better team for it going into the playoffs. 800-636-1067 is the number. You can tweet us at Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny. This is G&D on the Fan. Grant and Danny, welcome back. 106.7 The Fan. Jeff Zilgut of USA Today Sports will join us at 11. Blake Griffin was traded yesterday. Zilgut was one of the guys who broke the news. Now we've got some Wizards John Wall discussion to have with him as well. The news this morning, by way of the Washington Post and beat reporter Candace Buckner, Wall's going to miss 6 to 8 weeks. He's going to have a knee scope, minor procedure cleanup is what they're calling it, tomorrow, and then he'll need most of 2 months to recover and rehab before he's back on the floor nearly 30 games from now, potentially, for the Wizards. 800-636-1067 is the number. The phone lines are open for you to react to this breaking news live on the Fan. That is why we are here. I asked on Twitter, how big of a deal is this? How devastating? And our buddy Guy Lorenz said, it's devastating because every soul outside of Beal's content on being a catch-and-shoot player.
Yep.
If Otto came back with more of an ability to get his own baskets, they'd be just fine. This puts more emphasis on their needing to be better defensively. It's a great take because the Wizards, as of now, are designed in a way, basically, that almost demands that John Wall is not only active and healthy, but is terrific.
100%.
You've got a lot of guys around him, and I give them credit for building this thing this way. You should build around your supermax player. You should build around your special elite piece.
That's why they were so desperate for this, quote, stretch four. It's why they've moved heaven and earth to try to find one, because you want spacing. That makes sense when you have a fast, wide-open, beautiful assist machine in John Wall.
We heard Scott Brooks say it with the Junkies today. We're at our best when we're taking the ball out of the net, which means basically we're getting the inbound after a basket very quickly. We're running up and down the floor. He wants pacing and spacing and
rightfully
guys
so.
Knocking down shots from the outside, which is what it should look like with John Wall. The problem is when it isn't John Wall and it's Satoransky,
God bless him,
Frazier, as much as Satoransky, I think, has improved this year and as much as people have liked seeing his step forward, it's just not the same.
Let me just put it in this phraseology to keep it simple. Via ESPN stats and info. With Wall on the court, fourth in offensive efficiency. That's what the Wizards are. With Wall off the court, they're 22nd. It's a stark contrast. It's a different team. And the nice game against Atlanta, that was awesome. There are games where that'll happen. I'm glad that it happened. I'm not anti that it happened. You can't do that for 2 months. You can't, and you won't, especially when you got to play Golden State and Cleveland when they'll be desperate for wins, and Boston and Indiana and Toronto. You can't just walk up and down without John Wall and expect to be as good.
Let me give you a couple of more little nuggets on the numbers behind John Wall's injury. The Wizards' schedule at this point ranks the fourth hardest in the NBA the rest of this season, according to BPI. So if you rank every single team's schedule from now until the end of the year, the Wizards have the fourth hardest schedule. They have the highest opponent's win percentage of any team in their remaining schedule. So if you're just going by win percentage to this point in the year, no one's got a harder schedule than the Wizards.
Yeah, they squandered the easy part of their schedule with being only a couple games over 500. Mediocrity.
Their defensive efficiency, by the way, John Wall on and off the court is 106.1 compared to 104.7. So it's actually a little bit better. It'll be, I think, curious to see maybe if they can play some inspired defense and put shackles on people the next couple weeks, if they can steal a few games, you know, 93-86, something like that.
Satoransky's been a more willing defender this year because Wall's knee hasn't been right. That's been my kind of contention there.
Roy in Winchester, you're on Grant and Danny. What's up?
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on. I'm pretty much on the same boat with you guys, except for I actually think they're going to be better without Wall. If you noticed, playoffs last year, maybe right when they started the Boston series, John just wasn't right. He hasn't been right since then. Defensively, like you said, it's only 2%, but I think it's going to make a huge difference. These guys with a Bradley Beal who's really locked in, than with a John Wall who can't play defense
but
and
Roy,
can only
give
his ball.
But Roy, let me ask you this: I understand the defensive part of it. better, it seems insane. They've got a losing record without him this year, not to mention every player outside of Beal on that team basically needs Wall to be the best version of themselves. None of them can get their own shot.
I understand that to an extent, but I think you guys are going to see a Bradley Beal that we haven't seen yet. We're going to see a Bradley Beal that has to take this team further than he's ever had to. And I really think he's going to step up in a way that we can't imagine. He might even be in the MVP conversation at the end of the year.
Well, that's bullish. Thank you, Roy. I hope you're right. I think it's easier for Beal to become what he has, which is basically Ray Allen at this point of his career. If you look at some of the numbers, I know Chris Miles is at NBC Sports Washington has been talking about that. And I was having a conversation with him about that recently. But part of him getting there is that he hasn't had to be the marked guy that teams try to take away every single night.
Now, if you want him to be the ball handler in the half court, he's going to get blitzed to double-team and get the ball out of his hands. Okay, Otto, go ahead, create your own offense.
Yeah.
And it's not going to look good. A lot of those half-court possessions where no one does anything, it's a lot of dribbling, a fall-away long two as the shot clock expires. I don't know how you could say they'll be better without John Wall. I understand his point. You can improve defensively because Wall couldn't get locked in because of his knee. But the rest of the game, the other 96 feet, no way.
Oklahoma City tonight to get it started, by the way.
Good luck.
Russell Westbrook. Dan in Fairfax, how are you?
Danilo.
Grant and Dave, I just want to say Virginia's doing great today.
Thank you, Bob.
John Wall is my favorite player, and this is a big deal, guys. He may be out 8 weeks, and Scott Brooks has got to put his players in position and situations to make shots and play better defense. Gortat has got to step it up.
No kidding.
And I called in to Sports Talk last night on this subject and gave my opinion. I told Aaron Hawksworth that Bradley Beal is the key. He's capable of scoring 30 to 40 a night, and I think he is going to do that.
Well, he's going to have to score probably 30 or close to it a night at this point without John Wall.
But I like Dan's first point better. The guys that have been disappointing this year, Gortat, Markieff Morris, and Porter to a degree, that's where the step-up has to come from because Beal's already going to – his usage rate's going to stay the same. 19 shots a game. He's going to put up points. He's going to play make. He's going to do all those different things. Him elevating, there's only a little bit more room for the ceiling. Those other guys have to play up to par.
Squeeze in Mike, who's been waiting in Largo. What's up, Mike?
What's up, Grant? What's up, Rui? How you guys doing?
Hey, good, buddy.
Hey, look, you guys are absolutely right. You just hit the nail on the head, Danny. I mean, Bill's going to be fine. He's going to take his 19, 20 shots, but he'll probably go up to 20 to 25. Everybody else got to step up, but I'm not even feeling that anymore. But actually, Satoransky's got to step up. I mean, he's getting the time this season, but he's really going to have to step up, handling ball next to Beal. Also, if we do trade our first-round pick again this year, I'm leading the tank to the Cap Center, and we're going to run over Ernie's office. He should have been gone like 5 years ago, but if he trades another one again to save this season, I will be so pissed. We'll probably make the playoffs, 8th seed, 7th seed or something. But if I'm the Wiz, I would honestly sit Wall the rest of the season and just let the team run what we can. I mean, let's save his knees for next season.
Thanks, Mike. I don't think Ted Leonsis would sign off on letting him trade another first round pick to salvage a year where you've lost your best player to injury. I can't see that.
I hope. Please, Ted, I'm begging you, as a lifelong fan of this team that has never been rewarded with a 50-win season, please don't let him do it again. Please. Please.
I don't think he would. We can ask Jeff Zogut about that next. USA Today Sports. Also want to get his take on the monster, mega Blake Griffin deal. We'll do that next at 11:18. Another former Redskins assistant is on his way toward potentially becoming a head coach. You got the play calling and offensive coordinating duties for the Titans. We'll explain. You're listening to The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.